What's funny is we
That was
live
great.
now.
We're on live now.
Fail.
Yeah, that was good.
Fail.
Tell us what's
Fail.
great.
Welcome, everyone. I'm just taking the reins. Welcome to maybe next year. Let me explain what happened. I was just about to tell Frank, our host. I'm Paul, by the way.
I'm Scott.
Scott.
I'm Frank.
He's Scott. All right.
I'm hosting.
I was just about to tell our lead host here, Frank, that it's nice about Google Hangouts is we can look in the upper right corner and see it go from off-air to live, so we don't have to take that little five-second pause before we record, because we'll know exactly when it goes live. So I decide to start saying this sentence as we go live,
yep.
And notice it changed to live in the corner, and then I'm like, whoops, and then that just exacerbated the situation. So
well,
I have just stolen the intro. I've hijacked the intro from Frank.
Well, the good news is I don't have to like expend any energy in trying to make up like a clever joke about this week or something. I can just.
It's true. It's Paul just, already botched the intro for us.
The intro is botched and done, and we
sufficiently
can just,
botched.
Sometimes you got to take the bullet, and hey, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, so we won't lose the usual 42 minutes off the top talking about our intro.
I don't know. We could try. Okay, let's not. The Buffalo Bills won a football game this weekend on the road against a team that earlier this week I was confident could win 34-10 against Buffalo. And after the first quarter, I was feeling pretty good about my well, I wasn't feeling good. I was definitely feeling like it was possible that like Buffalo could get, you know, blown out of the water in Detroit. But they turned it around. They won a football game. They put up 17 unanswered points, 14 in the second half, 2-point conversion, a late touchdown in the fourth quarter, and the man with the plan, the late game-winning quarterback.
I thought you were saying the late, great Kyle Orton. I was like, oh, he's dead already, huh?
Man,
I think
they still retire undefeated as a Bills quarterback.
I think we can move right past whether retread Kyle Orton is good and move to the is he elite conversation.
I think so, yes.
I feel like that's fair.
So,
but truly, what a difference a quarterback makes that is remotely competent, which is something we kind of had talked about after the Houston game because we had watched a remotely competent quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick sort of be the difference between winning and losing for the Bills. And Kyle Orton threw the ball, as rusty as he was, generally at the numbers and between the hands of wide receivers, which proved actually pivotal. Talk about that more in a minute. But Bills win 17-14. Paul, what's your initial impression of the game?
You know, one, I will brag about being the only one of us who picked the Bills to win this game.
Yes,
you did.
Even though I was wrong on the score. I think I had the Bills winning, not in a landslide, but more comfortably by 7 or 10 points or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is, you know, we'll no doubt talk about the quarterback more in depth, so I'll just touch upon it. We said, you know, last week the Bills might have beaten the Texans if their quarterbacking had been just slightly below average instead of terrible. This week it was just, I would say it was above average overall, and that was the difference between winning and losing. This team had not had a 300-yard passer in 28 games, a.k.a. the entirety of E.J. Manuel's career, and then some. So to see Kyle in his first start put up, you know, that 308, and also not be bothered by the performance in the first half. Let's face it, Kyle was not looking too good in the first half of this game, but the whole team wasn't. The kick coverage wasn't good. You know, the receivers didn't seem to be very crisp in running their patterns. The running game never really got on track, and the defense had some early issues as well. But the great thing about this was, you know, there was a resiliency on the offensive side of the ball, especially like, hey, we're going to keep plugging away, we're going to keep plugging away, and, you know, we're going to get there. So it was just really, and I think there were some issues with the play calling. It was a very vanilla game plan.
Yeah.
I don't like running CJ into the line again. We'll talk about that in more detail later, I know. But again, the word I used in when I was tweeting was, you know, resiliency. And the defense just had the confidence, like, we're going to keep playing lights out. Eventually the offense will do it for us. Eventually we'll catch a break with the kicker being terrible, which I feel is, you know, a lot of people commented it was a very Billsy way for the Lions to lose, because that's how the Bills usually lose games. But instead, the Bills caught the break there. The Bills overcame the nasty-looking pick six in the first half. And Dan Carpenter hit the kick of all kicks. I remember Steve Christie's 59-yarder that was
Hold
long.
Hold on. Hey,
and it was...
Scott or Paul, can you talk?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can you? Oh, yep, you're fine. I can see you now. We had a weird noise on my computer, but you're all set. Please continue with your point.
That's all right. I was just saying on Carpenter's kick, I remember Steve Christie's. It was longer, but it was a meaningless 59-yard field goal at the end of the first half in a game the Bills would lose handily to the Dolphins. And for him to make that type of kick from that distance under that sort of pressure, that was something else. And that's why we love him, because his wife is always talking to us on Twitter. So that's good. But we also love him for really just making this team better. And really the special teams, let's not underestimate how their second half really helped this team win games.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think in general, I think it's pretty, it's really a great performance all around by the team. I think the biggest thing that I want to note is, you know, the quarterback play, obviously, you know, that's a huge part of what goes on. You know, it's how the offense runs. You know, it doesn't matter how good the running game can be sometimes, if, especially in the professional level, is you have to have competent quarterback play. We weren't getting that from EJ. But I think, honestly, I was pretty pleased. I think in general that I feel like the team, seeing the team lose focus and lose composure in late games or in blowouts or in games where you know, the quarterback play was particularly shoddy. And I think that might have been a little bit because it's hard to go out there and execute to your best when, you know, EJ's got a wide open Watkins and he misses him by, you know, 4 yards or something. And I think that that is part of the reason that the defense really buckled down on Sundays. I feel like they thought that they really maybe had a chance to win this. I mean, you know, and they did a great job. You know, they only gave Detroit 7 points in actual, you know, points that they gave up. You know, obviously Warren's interception, you know, counts, but for the defense, I think they played pretty well. I think the other thing, though, is that, you know, going forward, I want to be, you know, I'm still worried about this team in general. I'm not... You know, this was a very nearly run win on Sunday. You know, there was no doubt that, you know, maybe you can't expect a kicker on Detroit to hit all three of his, you know, 47-yard plus field goals, but you could probably hit him, you know, an average NFL kicker hits two out of those three at the very least, or at least one out of those three, in which case we're going to overtime. And we also have Detroit without Calvin Johnson for most of the game and without Reggie Bush for most of the game. So, now, yeah, the Bills were out of Kyle Williams and Nigel Bradham, but, you know, as good as our defense is, it doesn't revolve around one player the way that Detroit's offense to a certain extent revolves around Calvin Johnson. So,
right.
There's that.
Just to briefly interrupt, Scott, and then I'll let you finish. But like, look at this. You know, we mentioned Kyle being out. Marcel Darius, probably the prunes of his career, and then guys like Stephon Charles. Where'd he come from, stepping up and making the difference? So, just wanted to throw that in there as far as players stepping up with injury, which Detroit did not have happen.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of good players, and it was a road win, and it obviously is Orton's first game, and he's going to get better. But at the same time, I think some of the structural concerns about this team in terms of especially the offensive line and especially, you know, depth on the defensive line and at linebacker, given, you know, how, you know, obviously there's a lot of quality there, but at the same time, it's also a little thin. And if Darius, you know, we know Darius has the suspension to a certain extent hanging over his head at some point. That's going to come into play at some point. Hopefully Kyle's better soon. Hopefully we can get him back. But, you know, I still, you know, I was very excited on Sunday, but I don't want to, you know, throw out the you know, what this team was 2 weeks ago against San Diego, which was, you know, and San Diego is really a team that we should, I don't want to say be measuring ourselves again, but that's what a playoff team looks like.
That's true, but San Diego also really took the Jets to task. I mean, they housed the Jets. They're a good football team. They're not, and granted, that's ultimately the goal, is to get to a good football team. But Detroit's not a slouch. Chicago's not exactly a slouch. They held their own against Houston, who's had some success. And really, they're in first place in the AFC East, which is kind of what matters. They need to be able to beat teams like Miami and the Jets.
They're in first place in Week 5.
They're first place is first place, and they've beaten one of those teams. And the Jets don't look like a world beater. So, you know, I think there's a little more room for hope than they don't stack up against San Diego.
I think we can all agree on one point to draw us together here. This is looking like an excellent year for the Bills to snap the 4 straight years of last place in the AFC East, at least.
Yes, out of the basement.
Yeah.
Here we come, middle class of our 14th division.
Right. You're talking about third. Kyle Orton, though, 30 of 43 for 308 yards. He did look a lot worse in the first half, including the one interception, which I at least said to Scott, and Scott agreed. It was right where he was going, right to the receiver, which was good, but it was which was a big step up over EJ, but it was also very easy to read. Two sacks for
right. I liked his reaction after the game too. Said a lot. He was essentially when they asked him, I was like, "Eh, meh." You know, his response is like, "I've done it before. I'll do it again." You know, he knew he made a bad play. He felt bad. And it was just again the reaction to it was nice to see. Whereas he didn't just go and turtle on the sidelines like, "I'll just go out and throw for 308 yards."
You brought up the play calling, which was a bit vanilla, as you say. But I think that there was something smart that at the time I wasn't really picking up on. The Bills really struggled with the run offense. I mean, they had 22 carries for 49 yards total. C.J. Spiller had a really bad day, a really bad day. And he wasn't in the game very much either after he basically started having a bad day. We noticed that Fred was in a lot more packages. The thing that they did, which I realize now was like not actually as dumb as I was making it, was all the swing passes to Fred. They wanted to basically treat the swing pass in the flat and the screens as running plays, which is why, you know, Fred Jackson ends up with 7 catches and 58 yards, because that was sort of in lieu of, that was their, you know, that's a really difficult front line that Detroit has.
Yeah, well, that's the best defense. That's very possible that's the best defense, and the best front seven, certainly, that they'll play all season.
They'll ever play, right. And so the idea, I think, clearly was once they realized they were sort of beating their head against the wall, like trying to run it, it became an option where you could put Fred Jackson out, send guys out for a reception, and then they can't bunch in that box as much and bunch so close to the line, which gives a guy like Fred a chance to do it, which again highlights why the difference between Kyle Orton and E.J. Manuel, because E.J. Manuel struggles with that pass. He gets it to him, but he gets it to him a little bit high or a little bit low, and it takes that extra half second for Fred to turn around. And that's the difference between...
Stops his momentum, and now the defensive back's on him.
It's the difference between getting to the line of scrimmage and the difference in getting 6 or 7 yards or 5 yards or even 3 yards. So I was really actually, on reflection, impressed with their ability to adjust at least that far along.
But I think there's also some concerns about the run game in terms of, you know, the read option, as much as I don't particularly like it, and I feel like sometimes it's not our best personnel grouping. We have had success with it on occasion, and that is now completely gone. I mean, there is no threat of Kyle Orton really running that's going to keep defenses honest when you go to a read option look or a draw look. So they're going to be honing in more clearly on whoever the running back is, you know, because Orton is not a threat. Now, again, he brings some other things to the table, which is good, but I don't want to say this is all pluses with Kyle Orton in there. There's some minuses too, and I think as teams get more film on how Kyle Orton is going to operate in this offense, there's going to be a learning curve for both sides.
Sure, I just felt like it was important to note that this is one of those things that he can bring to the table.
There definitely will, but one good thing too is even his defenses start to compile film on Orton, that's not going to help them defend passes like the one to Marquise Goodwin in the second half where the coverage was there. Goodwin just ran a great pattern, got literally a half step ahead, and he put it in there perfectly. And I, you know, it's a throw I'm not confident EJ could make consistently. I think Orton makes that throw 25-30% of the time. I think Manuel makes it 5-10% of the time. Those are random percentages. I have nothing to back that up.
Sure.
But I think that's one good thing is you do force defenses to respect you going downfield a little bit. And this was the first time that, you know, they really did open it up a little bit. That play changed the whole look of the game. So hopefully, even as they catch up to Orton, and they will, as Scott points out, the Bills can make some the Bills will make some adjustments to counter, and also they'll have enough ability to overcome them just with the talent alone.
Yeah, and in terms of increased flexibility, I think Goodwin's appearance and Chris Hogan's appearances were both welcome kind of additions to this offense that has been stagnant, and I don't know how much of that was EJ's kind of lack of production in terms of finding guys who are open other than Sammy Watkins and to a certain extent Robert Woods and Mike Williams, but I think mostly he was honing in a lot on Watkins. I think that Goodwin and Hogan have roles to play on this team, whether it's on third down, whether it's stretching the field, and having the ability to take advantage of them, putting them into the offense more, I think that's something that we definitely need to be doing because, again, when you lose EJ, you do lose some things, but I think Kyle can definitely I think I'd say on balance he can definitely do a couple things more than EJ. It's just I'm not sure how well some of those things are suited to where the team is. Specifically, I'm most worried about the offensive line in terms of I don't know how many times Kyle Orton got hit on Sunday. I think it was like 7 or 8. He got sacked twice. You know, he got knocked down probably 10 or 11 times. I don't know that Kyle Orton's going to make it through the whole season if he has to go out there and do that every week.
We had one tweet which encapsulated a lot of what Scott said, which is that there was a third down play where Chris Hogan made just a phenomenal effort to try and get to the marker and fell just short. But it was he would have probably gotten if he would have been thrown the ball later, but he couldn't because the pressure was so much on Orton. And I tweeted, "Can't fault Hogan for the effort, whereas we can fault the O-line for its effort on most every play." And that Cyril Richardson, I mean, really, Craig Erbic is not an upgrade. I mean, I understand you want to develop Cyril, but I don't know if this is the right way to do it. He graded out as Pro Football Focus's one of their lowest offensive line performances of all time, if not of all time.
It's remarkable how many superlatives come for and against the Bills' offensive line. Like, J.J. Watt had the best defensive line performance ever last week, and now Cyril Richardson is the worst offense.
It's like somebody's, like they're in Madden, like, yeah. Goofing around. There was that guy who wanted to see if he could get, like, 200 sacks
I saw that.
J.J. Watt or whatever
I saw that
in one game.
With Clowney.
Right, with Clowney, right. And he's like, so he maxed him out, and then he like, turned all of the... linemen into, 5'2" guys.
He turned their awareness down to zero so that they would literally drop back into their pass rush set. Clowney would come at them, and then they would turn the other direction.
Right.
It's hilarious.
He ended up quitting because it was too sad.
Exactly.
It was too sad. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, no, Bills were good.
Yeah, no, go Bills. I mean, and the defense. I mean, again, the defense's performance.
I've been underselling the defense. And their corners still need work, but that front seven is great. And it doesn't matter.
Nickel Roby is doing his best, Justin Rogers. So we need to get. I pray for Ron Brooks' health for two reasons: one, for general purposes, and two, so that he can get in that nickel role and get Roby off the field. Because Roby on Golden Tate was. I mean, I've seen a lot of Halloween horror movies, and that was more frightening than any of them.
Yeah, that was a really scary moment. And actually, Scott thankfully didn't see it live. He had just missed the beginning of the game when he was coming over. But it was really gross to see. And then you saw the replay. So, but he's walking under his own power. He's not in a hospital. I have no clue. Like, I don't think there is a timetable for his return. I would be a little surprised if he played this week. But I know that they'll be checking him out and stuff like that. But that was a really scary injury. It was definitely... I don't know. Somebody had brought up somebody else that had happened to something very similar, and that guy just got up and kept playing. But that was...
Yeah, it can be scary. You know, it's just one of those things. Every time you go out there, there's something like that could happen. And I'm, you know, obviously I'm most glad that that Ron Brooks looks like he's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
But obviously that the team was able to kind of, you know, keep him in their thoughts, I'm sure, but also, you know, go out there and concentrate and continue on.
Okay.
Three stars. It is. So I usually don't do a 106th star. Usually I start with just the three stars, maybe an honorable mention or two. But I feel like in this particular game, unfortunately, we have to name 106th star, which is Alex Henry, who, as I pointed out to Frank on Sunday, at Nebraska, has the NCAA career record for most accurate field goal kicker. The career record. And in terms of extra points and field goals like combined accuracy, also has the NCAA record. He is the most leading scorer in Nebraska history, which Nebraska has been playing football for an incredibly long time at a high level. And the fact that he comes into the NFL and can't freaking hit a lick, you know, is just bizarre and has no explanation. And, you know, if you get cut the day after you play the Bills, you're going to be the 106th star.
Yeah. So appropriately, as you were speaking on the tweet deck, a note came through. Lions agreed to terms with former Broncos kicker Matt Prater.
That was out there. That was on Twitter. Someone said on Sunday, Matt Prater is now looking for places to live in the Detroit area.
Yeah, he's got his real estate agent already on the phone. Yep. So going back to our more traditional honorable mentions, there are two this week. One is... Golden Tate, who I really just is a complete dick, evidently, because I could not watch him on Sunday with, like...
Did you ever notice how he's a lot like Hines Ward?
I was going to reach through the screen and rip Rondé Barber out of the television and tell him he needs to freaking, you know, block somebody before he can be Hines Ward.
That's so true.
Anyway, I do not remember Hines Ward being that big of a dick. Like, I mean, he was a little cocky and he had a little aggression, but he was not doing Zorro on the field. I'm sorry.
After first down.
After first down. That was unacceptable to me. But he did have 7 catches for 134 yards, and he did abuse Nickell Robey, so I really can't fault him for his performance, but it definitely did hurt him in getting into the top 3 stars. Sorry.
We don't reward dicks.
Exactly. Unless they're on the Bills. Someone who's not a dick and who I wanted to get into the 3 stars, but is my boy, Fred Jackson, who had 7 catches for 58 yards. He also had 10 rushes for 49 yards and the 2-point conversion, which was obviously critical. That was a great check by Kyle Orton to get into that play, yes, as we find out after the fact. But Fred, you know, executing that obviously is, you know, a difference in the game, needless to say. So your actual 3 stars, I went all Bills. I was trying to, again, like Golden Tate was really the closest one for me. I mean, Dominican Sue, yeah, Nick Fairley both had pretty good games, but I feel like you could take out one of their performances and it wouldn't have impacted the outcome of the game the way that these 3 Bills did. Leading off with Marcell Dareus, who, as we mentioned before, already had, you know, basically people are saying this is his best game as a Bill. He was a terror. He had 3 sacks and another 2 tackles for loss. Especially with Kyle Williams out, that was the game. We needed him to step up, and he did. And it's pretty shocking that, you know, how good this team can be if we can get both of them healthy at the same time and playing with the kind of aggression that Dareus showed on Sunday. Because Dareus, I think that's one of the things that I would put on him is sometimes he doesn't give 100% effort, and Kyle always does. So if Dareus can bring it every game, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and Dareus did it play in over 80% of the snaps, I think, which is just absurd for a defensive tackle. That was something else.
For a 330-pound defensive
tackle.
Maybe
he just doesn't like Kyle Williams. And now he's happy.
I would hope that that's not the case, because that would be a bad sign. So who was my... Oh, I remember who my second star was.
That's good. No one else did.
And again, Colton Schmidt, I'm waiting for you, buddy. I really want to get you in here at some point, but I have to go back to Dan Carpenter, because if you hit a 58-yard field goal to win the game, and you're you know 3 or 4 in general with one off the post, which is tough.
We'll talk about the one he missed, by the way, in a minute.
It's true, and he may have a very good excuse for missing it. But you know, you make the 58-yarder to win the game. That's pretty freaking good. And given how the other kicker did, I think maybe that affected some of my decision making process.
Kicking on, above replacement level.
Yeah, exactly. the other ones weren't cheapies too, because I think one was from 50. So Dan Carpenter is your second star, and then your first star, and his first entrance on the list. I don't think we ever played Kyle Orton where he would have gotten a first star before, but
wow.
Kyle Orton with the first star, 30 of 43, 308 yards, 1 touchdown, a horrific pick that was returned for an interception. But, you know, if you want to talk about the guy who you take out this guy and put in someone like him, or someone who's not as good as him, or someone who does not play as well of a game as him, this is definitely a loss for the Bills, because there were too many. The running game was not doing anything.
No, it would have been an absolute loss.
This team would have scored 3 points if we weren't passing the ball.
Yeah, and it probably would have been like 27-3 because there would have been more turnovers and the Lions would have had more opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. So it just wouldn't have been close. So I have to give it to Orton.
Yeah, I have no right to make honorable mentions, but I will note, because we never mentioned him, which is a sign of pretty good play. Jordan Gay, the NFL's only kickoff specialist, who did every single one out the back of the end zone. Absolutely. To be completely non-returnable. And people say, oh, how can you justify a roster spot for a kickoff specialist? Maybe because you could line up zero guys next to him on a kickoff and cover it the same way if you line up 10 guys next to him.
It's an absolutely huge weapon, especially in those late game situations where Detroit, where we just scored, Detroit's going to get the ball back with 3 or 4 minutes left or 2 minutes left or whatever. And the difference between starting at your 20-yard and starting at your 40-yard line is huge.
Massive.
When you only need
at least 20 yards.
My dad and I were talking like, oh, are they going to squib kick? What are they going to do?
That's what I thought.
And he lined up and like, oh, that's right. He doesn't need to squib kick it because the Lions are just going to start at the 20. He's just going to put it through the end zone.
Yeah.
I'd like to shout out at least, I don't know if the honorable mention's allowed, but I'd like to shout out Sammy Watkins.
Oh, yeah, no.
7 catches and 87 yards. And he kind of showed up.
Two ridiculous ones.
2 really good catches, including the one where he was the key catch on the final drive of the game. And it was actually one of the few really sort of off passes that Orton threw. If he hits him in stride, man, that looked like a touchdown. There was a lot of room.
Then Dan Carpenter doesn't get the second star. Sammy Watkins gets the second
star. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, well, you know, these, but You got to shout him out because that was a pretty great.
That's why he's the first round pick.
It is, and I think that to Steven's question last week, I think that you're right. He was supposed to help EJ, but EJ is sort of a little beyond help, unfortunately. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But when you see what a guy who can throw a ball kind of chest high can do, I mean, he was in that game, and he had an absolute impact in the game. So that was including the one catch where he was, like, uncovered on the sideline for a key third down. He just was, like, it was, like, third and seven, and he was 9 yards over, and he's like, yep, and he just stepped out of bounds.
He just caught it right as he was going about, put his 2 feet down, and it's like, oh, that's all you have to do.
Right.
You don't have to have EJ spend 5 minutes wandering outside the pocket. What's
so
he
nice.
Going to
like,
do?
Am I going to die? Is there someone going to kill me by standing here?
Multiple third and long conversions. When has that happened in a game before?
Yeah.
At least 3 times was third and 9 or longer. Like, no problem. Boom, boom, boom. And then there was another first and 20 they overcame to get a first.
Did you guys see, speaking of weird plays along the sideline, did you see the Chiefs player who ran away from the 49ers running back?
No.
I'm going to pull up the Vine. I'll send it to you, too. Okay. When one of you starts talking for a long time again.
Sure.
Which one of you
just
will.
A matter of time.
Let's briefly touch on Green Light Gate, which apparently, Green Laser Gate, apparently was a real thing. I saw Orton grabbing his face and pointing at the ref and complaining about something, and we thought it was a face mask, and somehow the guys in the broadcast thought it was a hold or a late hit.
Late hit when he didn't even get hit really on the play. He got bumped in.
Yeah, and they but at the end it turns out that some guy was in some fan, I guess Lions fan, was pointing a laser, like one of those little laser pointer lasers, not a freaking laser beam, but a green laser light at his eyes and then later at Dan Carpenter's kick on the one he missed. So clearly, like, super bush league. So Buffalo.
No word yet on whether he was putting in Alex Henry's eyes for no reason.
Yeah, right. Just because he's like I don't know who Nebraska's rival is, but let's just say that team.
An Oklahoma fan.
Right. Yeah.
Very
definitely.
Angry.
Right.
And hates the Bills.
The weird thing was it made sense. I had seen these green lasers at the beach this summer. They were in a like beach store where like kids buy ridiculous things that say like South Myrtle Beach that for like $25 on them, including it said green laser, $18. And we asked like, what's green laser? And they were like, it's a green laser. And we're like, what does a green laser do? Like it shoots a light like beam of green. And we're like, this seems like a terrible $35 purchase. And they're like, because you're an adult. And like, yeah. but it came up again. Now, Buffalo Rumblings has posted the name of the guy they believe who did it because he sent out 2 tweets, one of which was hours before the game and one of which was like during the game / over the talking about where he got Kyle Orton and Kyle Orton was complaining about it. So it's circumstantial, but it's pretty strong circumstantial evidence.
Right, and there were videos today I actually might have seen
I didn't see
the
them.
Green dot. You could see the green dot. They were super slow-mo. They were slowed down, too. You could say, oh, that's Photoshop. But there was some pretty good – I thought it was good evidence. So we'll see if the NFL does address. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. They certainly turned it over to the security authorities, and the NFL is investigating it. And I think that they'll try and follow up on it. ESPN – the reason I'm not saying this guy's name is because ESPN didn't say this guy's name. And – he also deleted his Twitter account, so there's like you can't go find him and troll.
All of our mindless fans will do anything that we say, even if we don't say it, could, you know, decide to take matters into their own hands.
Right.
We don't want to be responsible for that kind of thing.
And if somehow like it really wasn't him, which I doubt, but like let's hope this guy gets like.
I mean his name was Barry Sanders, but we won't mention it, you know.
Barry Sanders. Yeah, he ran 75 yards back to get his late and then shown it one yard across the line.
He moves fast.
Here, I'm going to show Scott. Watch the linebacker when it starts up again. And we'll put this in the show notes, this guy.
That doesn't make any sense. So I have a question. In terms of distracting your opponents on the field when you're a home fan, what would you say the most effective but still not...
Legal?
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know if this is legal or not. I mean, I don't know what the rule is.
Oh, it sounded like he's going to be banned from the NFL if they...
Yeah, but the NFL can just make up rules whenever they want.
And they do.
but I would say, what's the one that would be... you know, most legitimate in terms of the eyes of other fans is, like, you know, obviously at the basketball games when guys are doing foul shots, you can have, you know, big heads or, you know,
move your arms
or that kind of thing. What do you guys, like, so is it just, like, can you get, like, 1,000 people to just show their asses in front of the field goal kicker, like,
right
as he's about to cue up? I mean, is that legitimate or is that effective at all? What do you guys think? Any thoughts?
I think that falls into public lewdness, so I think that would be difficult.
That's true.
There is a line.
Yeah, that would probably get you in trouble with the county. The NFL probably would also have a problem with you doing that. Though if everyone did it, they couldn't stop us.
Yeah, they can't arrest us all.
I'm just saying, they can't throw out every NFL fan.
No bad decision ever started with a rationale, they can't arrest us all.
Nope. Kind of like never just... Park, when people were getting yelled at for standing up during important parts of the game, the ushers were like, you have to sit down. And people are like, it's an important part of the game. And the people behind them were like, we're old and we don't want to stand up. But if everybody stood up, they couldn't throw us all out. And it might help the play on the field.
Lessons for you.
I don't know.
For you kids going to the Bills-Patriots game on Sunday.
It's just something to think about.
You know, if you can think of a good way to mess with Tom Brady in a non... You know,
I think if you got the whole crowd to chant Brady... Not Brady, but Brady. You did that, and it really was like 800,000 people.
It'd be like that Simpsons episode where Bart and Lisa are
Daryl,
and he starts crying.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you could do that.
Okay, but then it could, you know, it could just enrage him.
It could.
But it's worth a shot.
I think at this point, an angry Tom Brady is not as good as the angry Tom Brady.
It is pretty angry Tom Brady on Sunday night, and they kind of destroyed the Bengals. So, yeah, all right, anyway.
Not the Bills.
Yeah, I brought that up on Twitter yesterday, too. I love the Kansas City reaction, like, oh, Brady sucks, Pats are terrible. I'm like, we'll see, and then bam. It's like,
yeah, they were calling him dead. They were saying it was the end of Tom Brady. Someone said you could bench him. No need to start him on your fantasy team this week.
There was trade talk in New England. They were, you know, does Belichick need to go? You know, bring in Garoppolo. Let's just write off the season. Let's trade him.
Garoppolo,
the backup.
Oh, okay.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
I didn't know if he was the backup coach or the backup quarterback. I don't know.
That's true. He could be the backup.
Just Garoppolo from South Boston.
Yes. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Exactly. There's so many. Apparently, he's incredibly good looking. So there's something for the ladies. But
unlike homely Tom Brady.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
No, but much like our podcast. Okay. So I have a couple of questions about the quarterback that I'd written down. I put new Bills! ! And then I said, question one: how good is Kyle Orton? And whether this game changes your perception of him. Number two, is EJ Manuel done? Is it over? And what we mean by done is, like, does he have any role going forward? Is there ever a chance of him being a quarterback for the Bills again? I know that sort of relies on Kyle Orton continuing to be good, but that's part of the question. And how does this affect the team's success going forward? Because I feel like at this point you can fairly say, well, with EJ, I thought this was a 4-12 team. Let's say you're me, and you thought it was a 4-12, and I think that it is a 4-12 team. Manuel,
you're still standing by that too. You said you're going to stay with it until they win 5.
I am. I think I actually said I'm going to stay with it past getting 5. I think I'm just going to keep predicting 4 wins. But I do think I should have the right to say, well, with Kyle Orton, they're much more of a 7-win team. Still not good, but they're like they're certainly better and probably can pull out a few more victories. So I'd like to discuss that. I feel like I want to throw that open. The question is, how much better does this make the team? What does this do to EJ's role? And would
the
you
Orton thing
change?
Was
first. Yeah. And how good is Orton? So let's Scott start this time.
All right.
Well, because I can get beer. I can get beer and hear while Scott talks.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So
another...
yeah, sure. I'll take a beer. I will.
Me too, please. Thanks.
I will start by saying, I think as far as Kyle goes, I mean, I think I already talked about this a little bit, but I think it's just important to keep in mind that there's a reason that he was bouncing around the league for a while, and it's because he's not Peyton Manning, and he's not Drew Brees, and he's not Tom Brady. He is not, you know, at this point it's debatable, is he Tony Romo? Yeah, maybe, and Tony Romo can get you to the playoffs, but I don't know if he's getting you to the Super Bowl, and I think You know, he's been okay, and Tony Romo's had some issues on his team, but I don't know that the rest of this team is good enough to get Kyle Warren into the playoffs or get Kyle Warren into the Super Bowl. Now, in terms of the playoffs, because we're still in this point of the season where we can say that without jinxing too much because it's so completely ludicrous that it's outside the realm of possibility for us. I'd say that Orton is definitely someone who, based on the strength of the division, is someone who can get us there. I mean, whether it's this year or next, I think this year is going to be tough given, again, the offensive line concerns, Alonzo being out. I think the Patriots have shown on Sunday that they're still in this to win it, at least get into the playoffs and win the division. So that's part of it. And then I think I'll just go into EJ quick, and I'll say that EJ, my thing with EJ is if EJ wants to be a part of this team or any team in the future, that's entirely within his realm of possibility. Like, that's on him. If he wants to go in and spend the man hours, and, you know, Jaworski was talking about it last week, and he was saying, you know, EJ has all the physical talents, all the guys, all, you know, that central casting, big arm, fast, mobile, you know, kind of, you know, experience in big games from time in college, that kind of thing. But in terms of his accuracy, which is one of the most underrated things that a quarterback does in the pros, it's just not there. It's not NFL caliber. And if he wants to spend the time working on his footwork, working on his mechanics, you know, getting in those famous, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, not is that him? 10,000 hours of practice, you know, whatever. You know, taking 25,000 reps where he's dropping back three steps, five steps, seven steps, making sure every time he does it, it's in the correct fashion, and that he's anticipating throws, and that he's putting the, you know, putting his mechanics in the correct position to allow him to hit those throws accurately and repetitively. I think he can do that, and I think this is a time when he can get better. But I don't know EJ Manuel well enough. It would be very easy for me, because I'm a lazy son of a bitch, to say, I already cashed in on my first-round pick. If all I have to do is be remotely competent, I can stick around this league as a half-decent backup for the next 10 years, make $10, $15 million, call it a career, keep my head intact, and that's good enough for me. I would probably do that. So I don't – but, again, maybe you don't get to this level unless you, if you've got a little more than that. So I don't know, but I think a lot of it depends on EJ.
Do you think that – you said – let me just follow up. You said, you know, Kyle, maybe not this year, but maybe next year. Do you think he's a two-year guy? I mean, that's a two-year contract. Do you think that's it? Like, if Kyle Orton plays kind of like he played Sunday, plus or minus 50 yards, usually throwing about as many touchdowns as he does interceptions, so either 1-1, 2-1, 1-2, he's the guy for the next 2 years?
I mean, I don't have a problem saying he's the guy for the next 2 years because I don't think – because there's no alternative. If we had Teddy Bridgewater as our third-string quarterback, then I'd say, you know, Teddy, get ready. But Teddy, get ready. But, you know.
Look at you making shirts for other teams.
But given that we've, you know, as Steven has pointed out, we have traded around our first-round pick next year, and Manuel's under contract, I think, another year, and Orton is. Yeah, we call Kyle Orton's our guy for the next year and a half unless EJ puts all that work in and shows up next spring training and he's hitting Marquise Goodwin's on those 40-yard fly patterns, you know, 35-40% of the time, whatever Kyle's hitting it at. So,
Paul, do you want to follow up?
Yeah, on the on Orton to actually, I'll start
the
with
the future of the QB position on the Bills.
Yes, I'll start with UJ too, just because we were just talking about him most recently. Sure. You know, I mentioned last week there is always that 5%, what I call the Alex Smith chance, that you can be a first-round pick, kind of flub around early in your career, and then later in your career have a renaissance, pick it up, and be an effective quarterback. In Alex Smith's case, a Pro Bowl quarterback. And most importantly, in Kyle Smith's case, Alex Smith's case, helping a team become winners. He did in, you know, San Francisco that first year, and then was doing that second year before they replaced him with Kaepernick, and then in Kansas City last season and so far this season. That possibility exists. It is remote, though, and we so often see these guys kind of fade into the background. The one optimism I have with it is EJ really does have that right temperament. You know, he does have the understanding of he's not Ryan Leaf. He's not going to take a benching and be like, screw you guys, right. I know I'm the best. He's going to take the benching as well, They think I'm not good enough. I guess I better get better. And he'll do what he can to get better. Is the will to get better going to make him get better? Not necessarily. You know, we kind of got to play it by ear. So while I don't think he's done, and I do think that the odds are against him, it's a possibility. It is a work in progress. And you know what? If the Bills have blown first-round picks before, and to me, Aaron Maben would be a bigger bust than E.J. Manuel, whatever be. So, you know, I'm cool with it. He just plays at a high-profile position. On Kyle Orton being an answer this year and beyond, I would say certainly yes. I think he actually played better than Ryan Fitzpatrick typically would in a game. I thought he was a little more accurate than Fitzpatrick tended to be. He made one dumb mistake as opposed to Fitzpatrick's usual 2-3. You know, and I liked Ryan too. He's under contract for another year. That gives you time to look for long-term answers since he'll be 32 next year. But this is a guy who his rookie season back in 05 took a team with a very, you know, did what he had to with a team with a very strong defense in the Bears and helped them to a 12-4 record. So can he, as a veteran, take a team with another very strong defense and help them win games? Absolutely. I think he has that capability, and you can certainly look at him, in my mind, as a team that as a player that can get this team to the playoffs. And as Scott mentioned, is a Super Bowl a little bit out of reach for him? Maybe. Yeah, no, the Bears didn't go to the Super Bowl until the next year under Grossman. But you know what? I'm comfortable with him. I think the Bills can at least win football games with him and get to the playoffs with him, and hopefully we're all proven right on that point.
I'm glad to hear some of this, because that's kind of what I was thinking this week, too. I don't know. I think certainly he's not a long-term answer, but the prospect of Kyle Orton behind if at worst what you're going to get is this type of production, or maybe even a little worse, let's say that was like a good game and he would maybe go up or down a little bit around that for the next 2 years for a team that, you know, there are no options. There's no drafting a quarterback. Certainly this year, it would be the year after that you'd get your first chance to take another young quarterback. For me, Kyle Orton is a very decent stopgap, and frankly a lucky, I kind of want to say lucky stopgap, because you really could have had a team that was beating its head against the wall trying to get A.J. Manuel to work right, and it wasn't working right. And there are plenty of times where that would have happened, and there's certainly the earlier, or the other week, there was this, you know, would Marone bench him, and would it be self-serving in order to try and get wins as opposed to developing Manuel? Well, I think that it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. This team can do things, and it doesn't mean that A.J. Manuel can't get better.
I think it's more clear now that, you know, Marone almost certainly saw what Orton was doing in practice,
right,
what Manuel was doing in practice, and it's hard to see that any coach would be like, one of these is different than the other.
Yeah, and it's just like at some point he's that, you know, E.J. Manuel was playing, in fact, that poorly. And I think if you're E.J. Manuel, unless you're truly delusional, you knew you weren't playing well and there was something that wasn't clicking. And you have a bit of sympathy for the guy. He's had a handful of knee surgeries. He's never really had an honest sort of chance at, you know, since he's gotten to the NFL, he's sort of been stunted constantly in his ability to learn. So there is some of that. And part of me thought this week that, at least with regards to EJ's term, he's not going anywhere for 2 years. You know, they have him under contract, and I don't really think a lot of people are going to be that interested in him. And the only reason you'd cut E.J. Manuel is because you thought that you had something else better in hand. And so the good news for Bills fans and E.J. Manuel, I think, is this might be the exact right thing to happen to him, is that he doesn't need to be in the spotlight trying to, like, work under all this pressure out of nowhere. You know, like, there's a lot more pressure this year than a lot of other years because there's a whole bunch of new people coming in starting tomorrow when the Bakulas get voted in as owners. And so the fact that Whaley and Marone are trying to save their job, and a guy like E.J. Manuel doesn't have to deliver for them as a 13-game veteran, you know, you can back up some other guys, and now it might work out for everybody. The coaching staff might say, look, we're doing something good here. You can see it. Clearly, we're going to need to upgrade quarterback at some point, but, you know, we're headed in the right direction. E.J. Manuel has time to kind of get stuff under his wing and maybe end up like Paul says, Alex Smith. That used to be how quarterbacks groomed themselves. It was the exceptional quarterback that could, in fact, go out and play week one, day one. I mean, it was really Dan Marino, and Jim Kelly. And for every Dan Marino and Jim Kelly, there was a Steve Young and a Joe Montana who couldn't.
Yeah.
Or at least didn't.
No, I mean, I think one of the things that happened is as the rookie salaries became more and higher, higher and higher and
right.
higher, under the pre-2008 CBA,
yep,
or whatever year that was, there's this thing you were paying Alex Smith or David Carr, you know, $15, $20 million a season, and they better be freaking NFL ready right freaking now. And especially, I think, and you know, maybe there was some of the kind of NBA crossover at that point where you saw like Kobe Bryant or Kevin Garnett come in at 18-year-olds and play really well in an NBA, you know, a man's league. Maybe some of that kind of crossed, some of that mentality might have crossed over in the kind of popular mindset of pushing these guys into those starting roles too early. And you're right, I think this can be a really helpful situation for EJ. I think my biggest thing is my question is that what Paul was talking about is the will. Is it the will of EJ Manuel to get better and put in the man hours that it's going to take on him to work on his footwork, his mechanics?
Sure. Well, he's got nothing else to do right now, first of all, so that might help motivate
him. He can get stoned with his buddies. I'm just saying. Like,
he could. Of course he could, right. I'm saying that if he wants to play
football. It's hard to go out there for 10,000 hours and throw footballs all freaking day.
I'm sure it is. But the thing is that I don't know that there's...
It's nothing on the football team that he needs to do.
I guess what I want to say is that it's an I don't know, and that's fair that you don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly not an I don't know in the, like, I don't think there's a reason to mistrust that he would want to do it, necessarily, any more than there's a reason to believe that he would. I think it's 50-50 because we don't know him. And
well, he hasn't gotten better so far.
Yes and no. He's also been trying to get better while learning and having knee surgery, and you don't know that he hasn't tried.
I know he has not, his performance on the field has not
improved. He has not gotten better. That does not mean he has not tried or has not had the will to try.
Okay, all right.
He may just be terrible. in which case, he would still be an expert at quarterback because he'd be better than 99.999% of the planet. So
he's not getting 99.9% of the planet. He's not getting paid to be a good quarterback.
Absolutely. We can do this all day, pal.
Yes, we can.
Just come back in a minute, Paul. We'll be fine.
This is just fun to witness. I've smoking my Kyle Orton cigar right now and just, you know.
Cigar.
Enjoying this. We forgot to address C.J. Spiller, by the way, which...
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about... Well, he had a terrible day.
Yeah.
He was pretty terrible, and I think it's...
It was, and he, in his post-game conference, was very forthcoming about, like, had a bad day.
Yeah,
I'm just going to try harder next tomorrow.
That's all you can say. I think I'm sure that some of that's the competitor in him who was probably pretty annoyed that he didn't maybe felt like he got the chance to get on track to a certain extent, because by the second half when the pass game had started to open things up a little bit, he had kind of already lost a couple of the snaps to Fred at that point. I think at the same time though, it's on CJ to break through because he Fred
first round pick beginning to get a lot of money.
Fred gets caught from behind. You know, CJ usually doesn't get caught from behind. And, you know, CJ needs to use those natural skills that he has to put himself in a better position because, you know, I don't know if Fred's outworking him or maybe it's just the game plans.
He's certainly outplaying him because Fred has shown up the last 3 weeks.
He's absolutely.
A monster.
He's been a monster. No, and he's been great. And I think, you know.
Oldest running back in the league. I don't know if you knew that.
I
went to Little Coe College in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
It's becoming the new Harvard.
It is. Yeah, it's the same college that great Buffalo Bills head coach, great Marv Levy, went to.
Wait, I thought Levy was a... wasn't he an Ivy League man, though?
He was. He was also a Harvard guy.
Oh, okay. And then he went to... Okay.
Yeah.
Or before he went to college. Okay, so... but I don't know. So Spiller is...
All the great Bills went to small schools.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the University
Andre
of
Reed, Kutztown State.
That's true.
There you go.
Jim Kelly, University of Miami.
Anyway, little small
Drew
town
Smith,
school.
Virginia Tech. There he is, just working on his engineering
little
degree.
Little Podunk Agricultural College up in the mountains of southwestern Virginia. CJ, I got nothing.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I remember a couple of years ago during the Gailey era when we all complained about the lack of use of C.J. Spiller. Now they're concerned that the claim made that they're not utilizing him properly and he does run between the tackles too much. So I agree partially with that. I also agree partially that this offensive line being pretty bad overall contributes to that as well. They don't open up the holes that a better offensive line with it. Having an Andy Vitra there would help to do. Having general more talent up front. Both those two things being partially true, I'm agreeing with you guys and what Scott specifically said there of, he just hasn't been up to it the last few games. There have been some opportunities for him to break runs. Jerry Sullivan, the Buffalo News today, mentioned he'd had over half of his runs this year have been for 2 yards or less. That's just not an acceptable ratio, and we know the capabilities there. He's played with bad offensive lines before. You know, he's been in situations where he's been taken out of the game a lot more than he's being taken out of the game now. And we're just not seeing those plays. The plus for me is that, you know, players go through ups and downs in careers, just like we talked about the Patriots having a bad game, then a great game with Tom Brady, a quarterback, the last 2 weeks. Can happen to players, too, for some stretches of time. So I don't think he's done, and I think CJ has performed well against the Patriots in the past, so I'm optimistic this week that, you know, maybe we can see a breakout from him.
He doesn't this is the first time that in watching him that I really got over the whole why are you running him through the tackle stuff, because I watched it, and you can see that Fred's getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. And that's what ultimately started to bother me is, like, I'm really happy that he's like the kick returner and the punt returner, because he is explosive when he gets a moment.
Yeah.
But there are times where there was at least twice in space this week where, you know, he was trying to do – he did about four steps and it didn't work and he didn't shake the defender. And in those four steps, he lost 2 or 3 yards trying to make 30. And I get that that's what his game is to be the explosive guy who breaks out. But part of that is also is taking those 3 yards every now and then.
No, and I think some of – and honestly, I don't know what it is about Fred, how he can maintain – maybe it's balance, and that's something that, you know, it's kind of tough in a running back to teach or to have. Sometimes guys have it and some guys don't. But I feel like Fred, when he gets into the hole, he can kind of remain on his feet and wiggle around guys and kind of stay on his feet long enough to turn – you know, those 1 or 2 yard gains into 4 or 5 or 6 yard gains, which is it's just so hard to do and so hard to teach someone. And I don't feel like CJ ever really learned how to do that. And now it's, if you take that away from him, if he can't get those runs up the middle like that, then people are just going to be waiting on those outside runs. And it's a lot tougher in the course of a run first offense. Now in a pass first offense, there's a lot more room to get him in space. Guys aren't expecting it on screens and draws as much, so maybe it works better there. But the way the offense is currently configured, it doesn't play to his strengths, unfortunately.
Poops. Did anything happen this day in Bills history?
Well, I'm so glad. What a natural segue.
Yeah.
In fact, it did. I actually had to go back 24 years to find a Bills victory on October 7th. 1990. And there were some games played on this day. The most recent was in 2012. You might remember them losing to San Francisco 45-3.
Oh, yeah, that was NLDS. Game one, and I was much more interested in the baseball game by about the fourth quarter.
Obliterated.
I remember being at the bar we used to hang out at DC, and I was watching both games, and then eventually I just turned my back to the Bills game and was watching the Nationals game.
Yeah, I was getting updates from some 49ers fan behind me that was like, it's 1,000-2 now, and I'm like, great, yep, that game's over. But I'm sorry, so give us some more.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to 1990, and this was the year that ended up being the Super Bowl year. And to give you an idea of the background of this game, they're about to face the Los Angeles Raiders, who were at that point 4-0. The Bills were coming off a game against that's gone down in their history where they were trailing the Broncos 21-9 in the fourth quarter, and the Broncos were about to kick a field goal that the Bills blocked, and then the Bills would score 20 points in 72 seconds. So a similar set of circumstances the next week. They're playing, again, the undefeated Los Angeles Raiders. The Raiders were up 24-14 in the fourth quarter. 2 Jay Schrader touchdown passes, a 1-yard run by Marcus Allen, and a Jeff Jaeger field goal. Mervin Fernandez had caught, passes over 134 yards this year. And then all of a sudden, just like that, in the snap of a thumb and a forefinger, I guess that's what you snap, that lead vanished. Started with a Jim Kelly pass to James Lofton to get them back in the game, and then Steve Tasker, the man, the myth, the legend, blocking a punt that James Williams ran back. And to this day, I remember watching this. It was a Sunday night game. I was watching my grandparents' house and just all of us jumping up and down that this team that was down, 24-14 was now all of a sudden back up in the lead. Then they kicked a field goal. And then in a play, I will always remember, routine completion from Jay Schrader along the sidelines to Willie Gault. And Bills cornerback Nate Odom thought, you know what, Willie? I don't think you should have that ball in your hands. Let me just grab that from you and run into the end zone. And it's the only time I've ever seen a player catch a pass and then the defensive back just take the ball from him, rip it out of his arms, and then sprint 40 yards, or was it 42 yards into the end zone. So the Bills ended up scoring 24 points in a six-minute span, beating the then-undefeated Raiders 38-24. Buffalo would go on to finish that season 13-3. That was their first Super Bowl year. Raiders weren't slouches that year. They would finish the season 13-3, or they would finish season 12-4. They would meet the Bills in the AFC title game that year. We all know how that went for Los Angeles. And for the trivia tidbit for today, there was a Bill in this game, a Bills running back that attempted, he did not attempt a run, but he was 0 for 1 passing. The same Bills running back later that season in the Super Bowl had one carry in the Super Bowl. That carry was the Bills' only rushing touchdown of the Super Bowl until Thurman Thomas ran one in the fourth quarter. That carry was also the last carry of his NFL career. Who is this Bills running back who attempted an incomplete pass in the Raiders game?
Okay. If I get it right, and I don't think I'm going to get it right, because I'm not, I feel like this is wrong. Okay. But if I get it right, don't say anything, because I feel like Scott should deserve a chance to answer.
Of course.
Yeah.
And it's a running back.
Running back.
It's not just like a backfield player that might have also been another position.
No, definitely a defined running back, a career running back. Played a total, I'll give you some, he played a total of three seasons in the league.
Okay.
He was... During his Bills tenure, he became somewhat known for a play where he would stand next to Jim Kelly and Kent Hull would snap the ball directly to this player who would then go run with it.
I feel like this is wrong because I feel like he must have played more than this, but I have to go with Kenny Davis. So that's my guess.
Okay, so you're guessing Kenny Davis.
Kenneth Davis, yeah.
Kenny Davis.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking, well, I won't say who else I was thinking for a second.
Yeah, because I mean, you don't want
to... I don't want to step on you.
Exactly. You don't want to give me any hints.
Well, I feel like...
I've got a pretty good idea, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure because I was throwing around a couple of my names. Kenny Davis was one.
Right.
You know, he said it wasn't Thurman Thomas. I was thinking, you know, Xerxes, the Persian despot.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
he played only like a year, though.
Yeah, I don't know what year that was.
I think it was
early 90s. Oh, it was 322.
It's like 322.
Okay,
yeah.
So
right. And you could say he was more of an H-back than our true running back, Xerxes.
That's why I clarified, because if it's a fullback, maybe I go Xerxes. If it's a full halfback, I don't know.
You know, and then there was his dad, Cyrus, was also, you know, as a tight end.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's, again, not a running back.
No.
So that's why I think I'm going to go with Frederick Arthur Stanley, the 16th Earl of Derby.
Frederick Arthur Stanley, an excellent guess, but he completed his pass that day, Scott. So he would not be the Bills running back with an incomplete pass.
I like Fast Derb, though. He was, that's what they called him, the first Anglo-Saxon Durbin. What was it?
16th Earl of Derby?
Yep, Frederick somebody.
Frederick Arthur Stanley.
That's right, Fast Derb.
Who, you know, was a conservative party politician for many years after he got out of the army. And then he became Governor General of Canada. And you know what he did while he was Governor General of Canada?
Invented the CFL?
Gave a little silver bowl to a bunch of amateur hockey players.
Oh.
You know what they call that today?
They call that...
The Vince Lombardi Trophy. See, that's comedy. It's misdirection.
That was
great. It's not even correct.
That was really well done. You've learned a lot in your 3 years hanging out.
The professional
in front of microphones. I will take credit. You made that joke.
comedy reigns.
So Paul,
the player was it was not the Earl of the 16th Earl of Derby. It was the first Earl of generically named human beings, a man by the name of Don Smith.
Don Smith, the other guy with a boring name. Ken yes. Davis, pretty boring.
Smith, even more boring. In case you're wondering, Don Smith's career for the Bills, he had 20 carries for 82 yards in 1990. Two of them were touchdowns. He did play for Tampa Bay 2 years prior to that, where he totaled 20 carries as well. So he had a short career. I'll always remember his touchdown in the Super Bowl, I remember the a Tecmo Bowl person reviewing Tecmo Super Bowl once said, "I don't think the Bills had a player named Don Smith. I think this was a programmer putting an Easter egg in the game and sticking his own name to it." But in fact, he did exist. So that's Don Smith. If you're listening, and you very well may be, there's a reference to you tonight.
We remember.
I totally remember him now, and I feel bad that I didn't, because he did score a touchdown in a Super Bowl. And Ken Davis was after him anyway. So like,
They played together. Ken Davis played in the very game we talked about today. He had two carries for 4 yards. But yeah, his career. Kenny Davis ended up being with the Bills through 94, so we had four more years left in the
tank.
He was
there a while, yeah. I knew I was wrong, but I couldn't think of the other running back with Thurman.
The third string running back on the 1999
Bills. Cartwell Gardner was the fullback, right? He was the guy.
Well, Jamie Mueller was the fullback that year. He got replaced by Cartwell Gardner the following season in 91.
Yeah. Cartwell Gardner was the first name that came to mind, but then I was like, yeah, you said running back, so I didn't want to do that. The New England Patriots have an exceptional passing game. They struggle on defense every now and then. They can, however, win games.
Especially against the Bills.
They have done quite a few. This is the fourth quarterback in four tries that the Bills will have thrown up there. Ryan Fitzpatrick, followed by E.J. Manuel.
E.J. Manuel.
And then
Thad Lewis.
Thad Lewis, and now Kyle Orton. Good job. You nailed that one.
Yeah. Woo. Just a little bit off on the Lord Stanley one. So.
Well, you laid out your reasoning very well with that. Mm-hmm. But the Bills are going to be 3-point underdogs at home for a game that would probably determine sole possession of first place in the AFC East. I say probably because they could tie.
It will determine the position in first. I guess the sole possession of first place.
That's what I meant.
All right. So, do you want me to talk about this game now?
So the people are picking the Patriots are favored to win.
Okay, I understand that, and that makes total sense. I honestly, part of me doesn't want to pick this game because I am a little too invested in it because I really want us to beat them, and I'm slowly the conservative analytic part of me.
You're scared of hope.
Is very much.
You're scared of hope. You have hope
off
now.
Off of the Kyle Orton bandwagon. However, the part of me that roots for the Bills on Sundays from 1-4 is very much invested in the Kyle Orton bandwagon, and has been seeing this Patriot team totter like a decrepit king upon a throne. You know, too fat and gluttonous, but with no real challengers to his domain, and now slowly. You can see
they're King Hippo.
You know,
we've hit them in the mouth. They've been hit in the mouth. Their pants are down. It's time to punch them in the stomach.
It's one of these things where you only get a couple shots and you got to take them. So, obviously the matchups are tough because I feel like Brady is someone who can pick apart a secondary and the intermediate zones. I feel like our secondary is, I'll say slightly above average, but not even that. Like, mostly average. But if you want, I would lean on the slightly better than worse. They're going to need to have a really good game because, as Brady showed on Sunday night, he can make average receivers look really, really good. And that's what they have. They have a bunch of average receivers, but they have an above-average quarterback. Obviously an exceptional quarterback. And the offensive line, which up until 2 weeks ago was a huge catastrophe for them, is now suddenly looking a little bit better. Now, I don't think Cincinnati's defensive line is as good as ours is, especially if we can get Kyle Williams back, especially if we can get Nigel Bradham back to fill in some of those intermediate gaps. On offense, I think we can put up some points. I'm just concerned that if we get into a shootout, it's not going to end well for us. So I'm definitely concerned about this game, but I feel like it's at home. I feel like the Pats kind of spent a lot of emotion. Through my pick right now. Paul, do you want to chime in with any thoughts to try and sway me one way or another? Because I'm thinking through it.
All right, yeah. Scott, you mentioned the conservative analytic part of you, has its hesitations. And I can try and turn that part around a little bit and note that in 2011, the Bills beat the Patriots. And I would remind that Bills team, I think we would all agree, is less talented on the whole than this. Excuse me. Yeah, that Bills team was less talented on the whole than this Bills team, whereas this current Patriots team is less talented than that Patriots team was in 2011. So it's definitely a possibility. But let's face it, we've been down this road before. I was about the only person in Buffalo who was watching that Sunday night game and watching New England just railroad, Cincinnati, and thought, you know what, good. Make the Bills freaking earn this. Don't put them in a game against a down-and-out Pats team. Make it against a Pats team that just proved to everyone, like, hey, we're not dead yet. You know, we have something left in the tank. We still have Tom Brady at quarterback. Oh, yes, Rob Gronkowski is healthy. Look at what of a fun difference that makes. So it's going to be, you know, we have two very good, two very determined teams. I really expect this to be a close game. I don't see either team pulling away from the other. I think there's just going to be a lot of grit, to use a football cliche. So I don't know if that helps you, Scott, on the pick at all. Those are my thoughts on it.
I feel like it's just such a mental block, and it's what we call a bias in the business of making informed predictions about games and letting previous, you know, histories and failed predictions coming too much into mind. But I feel like it's one of those things where I can't pick the Bills to beat the Patriots until Brady or Belichick is gone, or we beat them, you know, 2 out of 3 times or 3 out of 4 times or something.
I can.
Okay. Well, then you can go ahead and do it, because I'm saying 31-28 Pats.
Nope, you're wrong.
Okay.
You're wrong.
Go right ahead, my
friends. You are wrong.
Tell me what you...
34-21 Buffalo, first of all.
34-21. So this is a double-digit win.
It's going down, kids.
This is a resounding victory.
It's going down. And it's going to be 34-14 for most of the game, to like a late little garbage strong touchdown.
Sneaks one in at the end.
This is nothing.
Wow.
The Bills excel at pass rush and stopping the run. They already don't have much of a running back, and this is the first year that they're not going to actually have a running back run all over them. They're also going to get in the backfield against Tom Brady. Those average receivers are going to have trouble. That's going to be the problem. If the Bills can get a turnover once or twice, they match up. The only place that the Patriots really match up better, I think, is in that passing game. Tom Brady can beat you if you don't get to him. They're going to get to him. They're not going to let him run those stunts off those stupid wide receivers that are just like, you know, 2 yards and then dive forward for 6. That stuff's saying that they know that book now. They're going to play it. Kyle Orton's going to give you competent play, and they're going to win. They're going to win by a couple. They're going to get a turnover for a touchdown. They're going to get a special teams touchdown.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
They are going to kick. There's an ass kicking coming, and I'm telling you, I've been saving this one for a while. I don't feel good about games very often. I don't make stupid picks very often. They're going to win the game.
They're going to make a stupid pick now.
I am going right into the Jinx pool, and I'm pulling down my pants, and I'm peeing all over the Jinx pool. Take this, Jinx pool. 34-21 Bills.
This is, hey, Paul, remember earlier in the season when Frank was...
They're going to get their 4th win of the season and lose out. I understand. But they're winning this week.
Frank was worried that we got into that crazy pills bottle that we keep above the kitchen sink. I'm worried that maybe that bottle fell down and maybe some of it washed into Frank's beer.
Kyle Orton, motherfucker. Yeah. Kyle motherfucking Orton.
I'm worried too. I was half waiting for Frank to say, and then Sam Adams is going to run back a Tom Brady pass for a touchdown, 31 yards.
Marcel Darius is going to be, you know, the wheel of time spins, man, and you know each age is the same as the last, and this time Marcel Darius is going to be the new Sam Adams. We're going to close the book on the Patriots today, on Sunday.
No, we're not going to lose 31-0 in week 17?
No, we're not. 31-24, we're going to break some spirits. Tom Brady's getting traded. Shit's done. It's over.
Belichick is burned by an angry mob
last
in Vermont on his way
last
home.
Last time we beat the Patriots, I may or may not have taken off all my clothes in the living room and jumped around. As my wife says, true story. May or may not be a true story, dear. May or may not be.
If you've ever seen a cat take its paws and cover its eyes, that was that moment.
I have a feeling I'm going to be naked again on Sunday. So do you want to come over and watch the game, Scott?
I'm going to be well over 800 miles away in Wisconsin next Sunday, and thank God for that, because there's nothing I want to see that's anything close to a naked Frank. Paul, please get this image out of my brain.
No problem. I'll make my pick, and that will make it vanish. I'm in between you guys. I say 27-24 Buffalo. And this time it's actually a semi-logical pick and not an all-heart pick.
Wow.
We're Bills heavy on this podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is getting out of hand.
Maybe next year, maybe on Sunday.
Oh, my God.
That's the name.
Oh, my God.
By the way, are we tracking all of our picks? Because I can tell you with getting the lines right, I have improved to 1-4 on my picks.
I have no clue. I don't
know. That was my job, and I haven't been keeping up with it. But I am aware of, like, last week, Paul was the only one to pick us correctly. 2 weeks ago, Frank was the only one. No, Paul was the only one to pick wrong.
Right.
And then the 2 weeks before that, we were all tied up except for Paul had also missed. So I think it's Paul is at 1-4. I am at...
I think you and me are 2 and 3.
2 and 3.
Okay.
I think that's what it is. But I will go double check and I will make sure that we have that right for next week. When the reckoning for the bill that you have, for the check that you have written tonight comes due.
I'm all in. We're going. It's happening.
Do you want to just throw
42-21?
You want to just go down to Vegas?
Want to keep going? Come on.
Want to go down to Vegas? 21. We'll put some money on the Bills making it to the Super Bowl. We'll cash in the winnings and that'll buy our tickets.
Bring it.
Okay.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't you just book your home playoff ticket for
for January?
For January. Okay. Just go ahead and set aside some money for that.
Got it. Noted.
Okay, that might have been too far, but they're gonna win, and the Patriots are gonna look a little stupid.
I will say this: if we do the wild cards, I was trying to think about the wild cards the other day, real quick. And Denver and San Diego, one of those teams is the wild card. I don't know who's getting the other wild card out of the other two or three
North
divisions.
North is kind of terrible.
North is kind of terrible. Houston and Indy, I think those are the teams that I would be a little worried about.
Mm-hmm. And Kansas City, I want to throw in there too.
Yeah, maybe you could throw Kansas City in too. You know, out of the AFC West as well. But I mean, and Houston did lose on Sunday, so that hurts their chances a little bit. I will say that we do have lost tiebreakers to both the Chargers and the Texans already. So let's win the division, Bills. It's the only way this wins. This is the only way we're making the playoffs this year, I think. But we'll see how it plays out.
If you want to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/bbillsmny. Twitter @bbillsmny. Our blog is currently at bbillsmny.wordpress.com, but I got an offer today to register bbillsmny.com for just $18.
Just $18.
All right.
So we could do
that. $6 a person.
It well, unless we get listeners, in which case it's $5.58 a person.
For hosting our podcasts and our two articles.
One
article a year.
Yeah, one article a year, yep. You're looking forward to March 2015, everyone. Next one will come.
Drink it in.
Right in the death of like all sports, Paul's like, all right, final, right? So we may, I don't know, we may upgrade. It might be worth the $18. I'm definitely not shelling out the $100 like extra premium. Storage premium nonsense.
No.
$18 I could maybe swing for a nice clean URL.
Yeah.
But bbillsmny.wordpress.com. Is where we're at now, and you can search iTunes, Beebles, MNY. We deleted last week's Hangout because it was mostly me eating pizza. And the thing is, when Scott comes over here, we can't point two cameras at us. But I guess we could kind of put the computer way across the room, and you might see both of us. So I just recorded it. My guess is the same thing will happen because I was just eating pizza. Whenever you guys are talking, basically listeners can assume I'm eating pizza.
Yeah, snuggle up, guys. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, you do like us close together.
Yep.
Well,
we'll work on that.
Until next week, when Scott has to prostrate himself before me at my wonderful prognostication skills.
You got a big plate of crow staring me in the face.
You're just going to have crow pizza.
All right, okay.
And eat crow.
I'll eat my hat while I'm at it.
Yeah, well, it's going to be crow hat pizza.
Okay.
It's deep dish crow hat pizza with a slice of humble
pie on it.
Humble cake. You don't deserve humble pie. You need.
Wow.
You need more humility than humble pie can handle. I can't. I am in so much trouble. this is going to be like they're going to be clips of this forever. Yep. Okay. Well, until then, until I either fall so flat on my face, or you know,
emerge victorious.
Fortune favors the bold, and buries the. Ones that
right.
don't make
Forge it. And favors the mighty Thor.
Well, you stole the... thank you. you stole the intro, Paul, why don't you close it up for us then?
Sure. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For maybe next year, I'm Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank. Have a good night, everyone. I'm still Frank. I'm trying to turn off the internet. There we go.
Still says live.